All right, listeners, this is the Grey Goose, and you're listening to 91.5 WGLZ. I've been looking forward to this for a while. We have a very special guest with us here on the line today. You may know him best for many, many, many of the songs we've played of his in our Unsigned Artist playlist. We have Mr. Matthew Alexander with us here today. Matthew, how are you?
I'm great. Walker, thank you for your support of my music. Thank you for having me on the station. I'm excited to be here.
Wonderful. Glad to have you. We're just going to delve right into it. I'd like to discuss a little of your background. Where are you originally from?
Well, I grew up in Manhattan, on the west side of Manhattan. And my parents were both artistic. My father was a classical pianist turned composer, and my mother was a poet. So I know if you ask about my first influence, it was 6 months old. I was 6 months old, and my first memory is him playing Bach, the C major prelude. So pretty good for an early influence.
Absolutely. Nothing but the best. Now, how...
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, now, how old were you when you first started to play?
Well, I started to play... my dad felt that I had enough talent to follow in his footsteps, so he started me on the piano when I was about four. And I played by ear. I would learn my brother's pieces by ear, and they'd see that the music was upside down. So my dad had high hopes for me, but those hopes were kind of dashed when I heard a third-grade teacher play in front of the assembly with a guitar. And I came home, and I told my mother I wanted to play the guitar and stop taking piano lessons from my dad. And she said, you better ask your dad. So I asked my dad, and his response, he said, absolutely not. The guitar is an inferior instrument. It's the piano or nothing. And luckily, my mother saw right through that, and she bought me my first guitar the following week, and I've been playing ever since. So it's been a long time with the guitar. I still love the piano, but that goes back to your people in the audience may shudder, but we're talking about 1958, 1960 when I started playing the guitar.
Yeah, many of our listeners weren't even in the picture when you started playing.
Yes. Yeah, I'm sure they shudder to hear such dates being thrown out.
Now, you can play guitar and you can play the piano. How many other instruments can you play?
Well, I sing and I can play the harmonica, but that's about it. I find it takes up plenty of time just to keep up with those instruments. I wish I had time. Actually, this will also probably strike people as odd. One of the things I would love to be able to do is learn to play the accordion. Because when I was a kid, I had memories of accordion players on the streets of New York City. And I had this vision of myself going across the Atlantic on a boat playing the accordion for people. So that might be in the future. We'll see.
Hey, you never know. You might be the next Myron Florin or Lawrence Welk.
Exactly right.
Now, you mentioned that you sing. Did you also start singing at a young age?
I did. I started singing probably in fourth grade, and singing is something that I have always loved singing, but I've had to work at it. It hasn't come naturally, and I've taken lessons along the way. I've taken guitar lessons as well when I was younger, and I think that's something I certainly would advise people to do on a regular basis, to check in with a singing coach, because it's an instrument just like other instruments. But I was swayed by people like Bob Dylan and the Beatles, who never had formal lessons, so I never thought I needed formal lessons. I didn't want to turn into an opera singer.
Yes, absolutely. It takes a lot of practice to be able to play an instrument, let alone sing. The voice is an instrument all its own.
Right, it's funny because if I sing without the guitar, I have a much harder time. I've done some recording where I've tried to just sing without playing, and it's very hard. So my singing is very tied in to the guitar.
Well, I don't know how to describe it, because sometimes it just you're better when you can actually hear the notes rather than doing a cappella.
Right, and when you've got the rhythm backing you up. It's just a sort of synchronicity or something, the synergy between the two that helps. So So I love singing. And that's one of the reasons why I think the guitar is a better instrument if you're a singer. Nothing against Billy Joel, who's a great singer. But when you're playing the guitar, you're facing the audience.
Mm-hmm.
The piano, you have a harder time facing the audience. And I think the guitar lends itself better to a vocal style.
Yes, absolutely. When you can actually see the face of the singer completely on, kind of, I don't know,
that's
it feels
right.
Like you can interact better.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, I got started when I heard that teacher sing in front of the assembly, and to sing in front of people is just one of the great joys of life, to have the lights go down and have this spotlight on you, and it's just you and the guitar. It's nothing like it.
Oh, I can only imagine. I'm not much musically inclined. I love to listen to it, but I don't think I could create my own, so...
Well, that's great. It takes all kinds, and I love to listen as well. So, but that's wonderful that you've got a love for music. Obviously, you do.
Wonderful. How old were you when you first started to create your own music?
Well, that's a great question. I was thinking about that today. I was about 12 when I started writing guitar melodies.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was about 15, I was at a camp. And this Brill Building songwriter, one of the classic songwriters named Lou Stallman. Lou wrote It's Going to Take a Miracle. He wrote a song called Round and Round. He was a hit songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
And he would come up to the camp every year to audition and put on a musical. And someone told him about me, and I played him some songs on the guitar, instrumentals. He said, "You got to come down to my publishing company in New York when you get back to the city." And once I had that encouragement, I started writing with words, and Lou published my first 12 songs. One of them was Held by the Turtles. And when he brought me into the recording studio, it was like going into a cathedral. It was, oh my God, this is incredible. The smell, the magic of it. And I've been hooked ever since. And I think songwriting is an incredible craft, because you've got 3 minutes to build a whole story and have a melody that people can hum and tie it all together. So, yeah, that goes back a ways. But, yeah, I've been writing songs since I was about 12.
Wonderful. Now, did you attend college for music?
I didn't. In fact, I took a pass-fail class in music,
mm-hmm.
and I got a D in it. It showed up as a pass. I didn't like taking music. I forget specifically what it was about that music class, but I don't think I would have done well. I didn't like theory. I didn't like notes. I liked playing by ear, and I liked playing with other people, so that wasn't what the class was about, so it was not a great experience for me. So that was the only music class I took at college. But at college is when I started performing in coffee houses, and that was the whole... Back then, it was before Starbucks.
Mm-hmm.
A coffee house was a place where you'd pay $2 to get in, $1 for coffee, and maybe 50 cents for a pastry, and then they'd have a stage and they'd have folk musicians play. And I worked my way up to being the headliner of the Nameless Coffee House in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And that was my lesson. That was my music classes, was to actually do it in front of a live audience.
Hey, the best way for some people is definitely to learn by experience. You can only learn so much from a textbook.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And performing is something, too, that is a skill that you have to practice, so that starting out, you introduce a song, you say, "Well, I wrote this song and blah, 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 and this place." No one's interested in that. What they're interested in is a story.
Mm-hmm.
So developing stories that weave into the song to bring the audience in, that's as much an art form as the song itself. Because if you're doing original music, people have never heard it before, so you want to be able to give it a context. So in my last show, I spent about 6 months working on the story for every song, and it made a big difference.
Absolutely. Storytelling is It's interesting, and it's hard to do and be able to actually convey what it is that you want to say. Because I can even do the same thing with broadcasting. You can have you have the hottest news story in the world, but, like, if you don't present it the right way, no one's going to care.
Right, exactly. Right. So this whole art to story, the stage presence, to the audience, to even the set list. All the great artists take a lot of care in the set list. You want to start out fast, get a little slow in the middle, and then end on a strong note. So there's a lot of preparation that goes into it, but you want to appear that it's seamless, that you're just making it up on the spot. It's interesting, if you follow a performer from city to city, what seems spontaneous the first time you hear them, you realize they do the same thing every night, but it sounds spontaneous, but it's a way of engaging the audience. By the way, I think the greatest person I've seen in the last decade do this is Taylor Swift. I have a daughter who's 15,
mm-hmm.
and we went to a Taylor Swift concert, and she's a master at engaging the audience. So I would, a shout out to Taylor Swift.
Hey, there you go. If Taylor, if you're listening, there you go.
There you go.
Now, one of the things that I always liked about your musical style was the singer-songwriter. You write a lot of your own music, you write a lot of your own melodies. That's one of the things that tends to be lacking in a lot of today's music. Everybody has their own music writers. Everyone has their own lyric writers. It's just the singer singing. But I think what makes the truly beautiful songs beautiful is when they put in the effort into all the areas involved.
That's a great point. And that is the epitome, to be able to excel, and I'm not saying I necessarily do, but to have somebody that's really outstanding in their instrument, whether it's their voice or their guitar, and then a great songwriter and a great performer. You put all three of those together, that's pretty rare. But, you know, the ones that have most influenced me, the greats like Gordon Lightfoot, Bob Dylan, people that write their own songs, of course, the Beatles. There's a guy out of England, Michael Kamenuka, who is a phenomenal singer-songwriter. So I'm still looking for new ones that appeal to me. But that's my favorite genre. So Cat Stevens is a great example of a totally self-contained singer-songwriter whose music still sounds good, you know, 40, 50 years later, which is the real test, is whether something sounds good. I recently heard James Taylor's first album on Sirius XM. They played Carolina on My Mind. And the production of that was absolutely terrible. It sounds terrible. So he went back and re-recorded it, and it's so much better. So if you're a singer-songwriter, there's also capturing that in the studio. And that's where I like to do my recording live, to capture that magic. So it's a moment in time, and you know you've succeeded if you're lucky to have 30 years go by, and you'll listen back to it and say, hey, that still sounds good.
Absolutely. And the artists that you've just described, those are definitely some of the ones that are in my favorites as well. I mean, I listen to a lot of newer stuff, and I have a very wide variety of tastes, but I really like some guy just walking out, playing a guitar, and singing his heart out. Those are some of the best ones out there. James Taylor has always been I've always been a big fan of his. I'm actually going to get to see Gordon Lightfoot later this year. He's coming to our area, so I'm looking forward to finally getting to hear him.
Oh, I did. That's fantastic. I saw him about 2 years ago, and I've seen him. I actually got to talk with him once backstage, and he was so engaging and humble, and he credited Bob Dylan. He says, if it weren't for Bob Dylan, I wouldn't have expanded my writing. But you're probably a fan of the Canadian Railroad Trilogy, which mm-hmm. is, I think, one of the most incredible songs. And I read his biography recently, and one of the things that's, you know, advice for young people out there is, even someone as talented as he did, he had to tour relentlessly to get to where he was. So getting out there and playing all the time is really a good thing. But I'm excited for you. He's still good. He had a stroke, so he's not 100%, but he's a legend, and I'm delighted you're going to get to see him. I didn't realize he was still out there.
Well, I was looking forward to it myself because my father's a very big fan of his, and I'm actually taking him for Father's Day. And when I was looking around at, like, different tours and stuff like that, I saw he mostly stays in either Canada or does some Florida stuff. And then all of a sudden, it's like, Greensburg, Pennsylvania. I'm like, oh, that's like an hour from here. How can I not afford to go?
That's fantastic. You got to let me know how that is.
Absolutely. I'll definitely let you know.
Yeah, please do.
Now, one of the things you had mentioned during that last little bit was about artists that tour and tour and tour. That's one of the things that we're not, I don't think we're going to see that as much now with a lot of these newer artists. Because, I mean, you got, for example, Gordon Lightfoot. He's 80. He's still out there touring. I don't see many of today's artists going past, like, 60 and still doing a lot of shows.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think there are different ways to succeed these days. And a lot of it has to do with as you probably know, with social media and getting seen, getting exposure that way. I still think, though, touring, if I was in my 20s and wanted to make my career as a singer-songwriter, I would spend 8 months a year just touring. And you play coffee houses, and the first year you're out, you may get five people. Then next time you come through town, you get 15. In the third year, maybe up to 50. And before you know it, you've got a following. But that's not the easy way to do it, and maybe people don't do it that way anymore. But that is one way to do it. The social media thing is hard because you're competing against so many people. So I think you have to find a way to stand out, find some type of niche.
Yeah, absolutely. And social media is definitely going to change the way that we view music because now it's really at the forefront. I mean, 10 years ago, it was kind of just starting out, but now we're 10 years down the line. The possibilities are endless.
Right. That's right. So if you're a musician, to have somebody working with you who's good at doing that, collaborating, because that's a nonstop thing. And what I would recommend to young musicians is do something. You've got to do something every day to advance your music. Send out five emails, do a posting, take a seminar. There are a lot of great websites for do-it-yourself musicians with a lot of great advice. But it takes time. You got to work it. You got to work it and work it and work it. And that's if you want to make a living at it. If you don't want to make a living at it, then do it for fun and do something else, and then you're in charge of your own destiny. I don't have anybody telling me what to record, when to record. It's purely love. I just love recording, and every time I go into the studio, I'm thinking, this is going to be it. I'm going to make the perfect song. And perfection doesn't exist, so as long as I'm still standing, I'll be going back into the studio looking for that perfect song.
Well, hey, there you go. You got to strive for perfection, and if you love what you're doing, it's not even work.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And sometimes you don't really know until you get in the studio whether the magic is there or not. But I do think, I've said this before, I think there aren't a lot of places in life, a lot of places where you can find magic, but movies are one, and a recording studio is another. Now a lot of people have studios in their home. It doesn't matter. There's something about hearing the song back and having it be an entity that you've created separate from yourself. That's an unbelievable experience, even if it's doing it in your home recording studio. I prefer to let professionals do the engineering and the mastering. That allows me to focus on the singing and the writing.
Absolutely. There's no better feeling in the world than hearing just a truly beautiful song, and then to add to it when it's you that's created it too. I mean,
I know.
There's nothing better.
I know. I've been known, and I'm not the only person, but I've been known to get very emotional hearing something back, and you hear it back, and it's just wow. But then ultimately it's whether it touches other people as well. So that's ultimately what you're going for. But you can't get too caught. I've gone through periods where I've written to try to make a living at it. And I like those songs, but it's not the same as a song that has a deep resonance for me.
Absolutely. Now, Now we're going to talk a little bit about some of the songs that you've been able to create in your career. We're going to start at the beginning. We're going to start with the first album that you had sent, Early Recordings.
I hadn't remembered whether I had sent that to you or not. I'm glad you have that.
Yeah, absolutely. You've sent us a good deal of music, and it's been interesting just to be able to hear the evolution over the years.
Yes, yeah, we can talk about that. The album you're referring to was a collection of demos that I did between 1967 and 1977. So during that period, I lived in New York. I was in a band in New York, and then I lived in L.A. and probably called every publisher in Los Angeles and played them my songs. And a lot of these songs that were on that record were published, and a couple were held by some artists that, well, I'm not recording them, but they were held by them for quite a while.
Now, out of the tracks that you've recorded, which ones stand out in your mind as being some of your favorites from that album?
I like Beautiful One, which is the third track. I like the melody of that, the optimism of that. Love is an Endless Road is the last song there, and I like that a lot, too. That brings back a lot of memories from that time in my life. When We Say Goodbye is another favorite. But there are several there. Reap What You Sow I like a lot. I still do that one. Bring Your Friends Home, David is a totally different type of song. It's a 6-minute docudrama about a mother-son relationship. But they're all, you know, so I think those are ones that come to my mind.
Wonderful. There's so many great tracks off that album, and it was quite a different one for me hearing it compared to some of the others, because it has a lot more of that folk kind of influence on it, and I really like that.
Yeah, great. Yeah, my son is over in Scotland and going to school over there, and he says that a lot of the his classmates particularly like that album, so maybe it's that folk feeling that you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. There's certain songs that you hear, and there's when you hear it compared to other genres, I don't know what it is about folk, but it's very interesting when you just think about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's interesting, because it would be, that's the most raw folk, and it's got a little country in there, but folk singing was what I grew up on. Ian and Sylvia, the Kingston Trio, people like that.
Absolutely. Now, you followed that album up with Wishing I Had Wings.
Right.
Now, when did that album get released?
That was 1987, and so when I spent 3 years in Los Angeles pursuing music, and I had a lot of success, but not enough success to call it a career. So I decided to go back to graduate school, and I became a psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
But I made a vow to myself. I said, you know what, I'm going to support my own music and fund my own music. So I saved up money, and I saved over about 3 years, and I picked the best studio in Charlotte, which was Reflection Studio, where REM records, and got Steve Hegler, who was had produced some hit records, and he was working with a guy named Richard Putnam, and we collaborated on this record, and I spent a year preparing for it, voice lessons, I knew every song, so they were flabbergasted because I hardly had to do any, there was no cutting and pasting.
Mm-hmm.
All the vocals were done from beginning to end without any cutting and pasting, but on that record, I'm really happy with the way it stands up over time, and one of the songs, The World Just Keeps Spinning Round, was written in 1966 when I was a high school student, And that's a song that was held by the Turtles. And I think that came out well. And then Marianne, I Remember Well, is another song from that record that I auditioned for a guy named Emmett Rhodes, who was a very famous producer in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
And I played with him about five songs, and that was his favorite. So that song means a lot to me as well. And the title track is one that my producer insisted that I include, Wishing I Had Wings. So that's probably the most polished of the CDs.
Wonderful. Now we're going to move on to the third one, which of all the ones I've listened to, the third one's honestly my favorite, and that was April Heart.
That is so nice to hear that.
Because, I mean, I've listened to all of them, and I just, there's something that, I don't know if it, like, is gravitational pull or what it was, but I've listened to it quite a few times since you sent it. I've really enjoyed the album.
I'm really glad to hear that. That is one of my favorites, and the song on there, Inside a Dream and April Heart, I'm very fond of. And that one, I, you know, a lot of these records, I reacted to the one before. So Wishing I Had Wings, I thought, well, that's a little too country. That's not really me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to make this one that's more folk pop. And that was April Heart. And I'm really delighted that you like it. I think it's got a very warm feeling about it.
It does. It's kind of, I don't want to call it welcoming, but it just makes you feel like this is a CD you could curl up with for a while and listen to.
Yeah. I'm really glad to hear you say that.
Now, this is one of the ones where I tried to choose just one song from each album, but this is one of the albums I chose two songs from to play, so I'm not going to tell you which ones yet, but...
Okay. I can't wait to hear them.
Very big fan of the album. So then you did April Heart, and then eventually followed that up with American Boy.
Right. So American Boy was, I thought, well, you know, April Heart is, maybe it's a little overproduced. Let me strip this back down to the bare essentials. A solo album, just me singing and playing. And this was done live.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would overdub guitar on it. And honestly, though, I was out of money. So I thought, well, I'll save money. I'll do my own guitar parts and strip it down. So that's the stripped down record.
Mm-hmm.
And... you know, that's me playing on Pandora. Several of them are on Pandora. I've got my own station, Matthew Alexander Radio, and that's one that they play a fair amount. And that has a lot of songs from early in my songwriting career up until the time I did that record. So it spans the gamut of songs.
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely covers a lot of ground on it.
Yes, yeah. So, yeah, so that was very stripped down, and I had some very favorable reviews. I got a wonderful review in the Charlotte Observer,
mm-hmm.
The music reviewer. He said it was an album that ought to be in everyone's album collection, so I was really happy with that, and so I was very proud of that because it's just me, and there's a song on there that's particularly popular in Scotland with my friends, the friends of my son. It's a White Crystals of Snow song.
Mm-hmm.
I could go on in detail about any of these songs, but they all do have stories.
Absolutely. And we only have so much time. What you need to do is write a book about all your songs.
That's not a bad idea.
I'd give it a read, most certainly. I love hearing backstories on different songs.
Yeah, oh, that's fantastic. A great idea.
So then now we're on to your next album. We followed it up with Daredevil Angel.
Yes, now Daredevil Angel, I found a collaborator by the name of Fred Story, who is a film composer, multi-instrumentalist, phenomenal musician, producer, and he and I collaborated on that record, and it's two people rather than one person, and he's doing all the other instruments. A lot of it is synthesized, but as he would explain, you can't play a synthesized bass unless you know how to play the real bass. So it was, again, live recordings, and then we added the instruments later.
Hmm.
So that was Daredevil Angel, and that was the title that was given to me by a friend of mine, and that became the title track.
Now, out of all the songs off of that album, is there any one that's sticking out from your mind?
The one that I like the best is the last one, River City.
Mm-hmm.
I think if of all my songs, that's one of my favorites because of the message that to know where you're going in life, you really have to find out who you are, and that can take a long time. But once you know who you are, everything else falls into place. So I like that song a lot. Another one that I like a lot is New York City Backwoods.
Mm-hmm.
But New York City Backwoods is about autobiographical. It's a story of growing up in New York City, and my brother Lewis committed suicide when I was in college, and this song was about that whole experience and my love-hate relationship with New York, which is where he killed himself. And there's an extended 3 to 4 minute guitar solo at the end that I really put my heart and soul into. It. So for me, I'm so delighted that you respond to my music because it's got a lot of emotion in it. So the music I like the best has melody and it has feeling, or else I don't see what the point is. And maybe that goes back to Chopin and Bach. I want music with feeling, music that expresses something meaningful. Rhythm is great, and I think a lot of, like, Charlie Puth has his song, I'm Just One Call Away. Great song with a great rhythm track, so I'm not knocking rhythm, but melody to me is first and foremost. And so long way of saying New York City Backwards, Backwoods might be my favorite song on that CD.
Wonderful. And it's definitely better listening to music that has emotion when people actually care about the music that they're creating.
Absolutely. Yeah. Otherwise, why do it? I'd much rather care about the music I'm creating and have some success than have major success with the song I could care less about.
Right. So now that brings us into the most recent album that we have received from you, 3 Minute Movie. Now this was the album that I had first heard of yours, and that's how I originally had gotten hooked up with you and your music.
Right. Yeah, 3 Minute Movie, I decided, well, let's not do any synthesized instruments. Let's use all real instruments. And that record took about 2 years to finish, and it's got some covers on it that I'm very proud of. I also decided to showcase my finger picking on that record because I've been a finger picker my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to really showcase that. So I did a version of Beyond the Sea, the great classic song with finger picking. And Ramblin' Rose would be another song, a cover song. But I'm very proud of the finger picking on Lost in This World. And the title track is from a meeting I had with a producer, publisher in Los Angeles, who I played him 3 or 4 songs, and he looked at me and said, "Alexander, you write good songs." And I'm thinking to myself, this is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked him. He says, "You write good songs, but we're looking for great songs." So I said, "Well, what do you mean? Well, what are you talking about? What's a great song?" And he says, "Oh, I'm glad you asked. A great song is a 3-minute movie. You've got to, you know, start out with the opening line. You pull them in with the opening line. You build a story. You have a great melody. You bring it to a climax and then a resolution. You wrap it up within 3 minutes. That's a great song. That's a 3-minute movie." So as I'm leaving his office, I'm thinking to myself, I'll probably never see this guy again, but he's just giving me a great title for a song. And it took me 35 years to write the song. But the song is an autobiographical story about that story. It's a 3-minute movie about being told to write a 3-minute movie. And in the fantasy, the 3-minute movie becomes the great success. Ironically enough, there is a solo in there, so the 3-minute movie song is actually 4 minutes. But if you take the solo out, I would get it under 3 minutes.
Hey, there you go. 3 minutes, four minutes, it still tells a great story.
Yeah, yeah. And that's and there's another song on there, which is was a story told to me about a woman who, when she was a child, she asked her mother this weird question. She asked, "Mom, would you love me if you didn't know me?" And the mother said, "Of course I would. You're my daughter. That's a crazy question. Don't ask me such stupid questions." Well, fast forward 60, 70 years, everyone's grown up, and the mother now is 80s with Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
And she says to her daughter, who's living with her, she says, "I don't know who you are, but I love you anyway." And it was this incredible turnaround, because that was the question she asked when she was a little child. So that one, I heard that story, I told my wife about it, she said, "Well, that's your next song." And that became one of the songs on the three-minute movie called If You Didn't Know Me.
Beautiful story. Beautiful story.
Yeah. Thank you.
So now, we're up to the present. What kind of future plans do you have for your music?
Well, as you know, I sent you 6 CDs, and 7 is the lucky number.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm working on a 7th CD. It's going to be a combination of a stripped-down sound with very select instruments, and the working title is Soul River. And it should be out. I hope to tour behind it. It should be out in about a year or two.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to include some orchestral pieces. So I have a song called Twilight Dream, which is about a 5-minute guitar piece. And Fred Story and I are going to hire musicians from the Moscow Symphony to play on it. And it's going to be a real orchestral movie-type piece. And then there'll be a lot of songs in there that are a lot simpler. But it's going to include some piano songs that I do. But it'll be all original. There may be I think there's a cover of Buckets of Rain by Bob Dylan. But other than that, it'll be all original. And I'll have to tour behind that in a couple of years. I'm also working with my son, who's a cross between Billy Joel and Michael Bublé. He's also a songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
I want to produce a record of his.
Well, we definitely look forward to hearing all of that here in the coming years.
Great. Thank you, Walker. Yeah.
Now, one of the other things I was wanting to ask you, and this is for a lot of the musicians that are most likely listening, what sort of advice would you like to pass along to them?
Well, you know, it's a great question, and there are a lot of answers to that. So I go back to everything I learned in kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about this recently, that I think one of the great metaphysical songs of all time is Row, Row, Row Your Boat. And I will tell you how I think it applies to musicians. So the first line is row, row, row your boat. That's 4 rows or 3 rows. Meaning you've got to perfect your craft if you're a musician. You want to keep working at it. You want to improve your craft, use social media. Every day do something to advance your music. Row, row, row your boat. Work it. Work it nonstop. Gently down the stream, be a good person. Support other people's musicians. You don't have to be a jerk to make it in music. Kindness is its own reward. So support other musicians, and they'll support you. The third line of that nursery rhyme is merrily, merrily, merrily. So have a positive attitude. Everyone has failed, so failure is one step closer to success. Be resilient, be positive. And then life is but a dream. We're all shadows, kind of shifting, drifting through life. You might as well make the most of it. So be bold, whether you need a Kickstarter campaign. Don't be afraid. There's a great story about Lady Gaga was playing the piano, and no one was paying attention to her. This is when nobody knew her. And she pulled her dress up over her head. And then all of a sudden, everyone paid attention. So you may not need to do quite that. But you want to be bold. Why not? You know, life is a dream. Be bold. So have fun, find people to collaborate with, I would be careful of anyone that charges you for their services. There are a lot of people that are willing to take your money for nothing in the music business, so be very careful about that. I would get out there and perform a lot. Find your niche. If you want to make money at it, you've got to find a niche, something that makes you stand out. Bonnie Raitt was a friend of mine from college,
mm-hmm.
and what she did is she, I don't know if she did this consciously, she was interested in the blues, but she's the only, well, the first female guitar player, singer, who can play slide guitar. So she found a niche. Finding a niche is really important, whether it's instrumental music or maybe you specialize in love songs, wedding music. You've got to find a niche to make you stand out. And then take advantage of all the websites for independent musicians, the do-it-yourself websites. And the secret to getting a record contract is very simple. Make your own CDs and sell a ton of them.
Hmm.
If you do your own market research and you're playing gigs and selling 100, 200 CDs or downloads, people are going to take notice of that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's self-promotion is key.
It is. It is. And if you can't do it, then find someone that can do it for you. I think duos are very popular. There aren't a lot of people in duos, so I think if you're a singer-songwriter, maybe combining with another singer-songwriter and forming a duo is a way of standing out. Things like that.
Absolutely. How many shows do you typically play a year?
It depends a lot. So I kind of go into hibernation, and then I come out of hibernation. So I pick my shows very carefully. So in a particular year, I might do 6 to 10 shows.
Hmm.
But usually I work those a lot to make sure I have a really good turnout. And usually I do, and I put a lot of work into that. And then I go back and hibernate for a while and then come back out a few years later and do some more shows. So I'm not at a point, I'm still raising my kids, where I can get out there and do it nonstop. So I have to be selective. But if you're starting out, you can't do enough shows.
Yeah, absolutely. Touring is very key to get your name out there and stick into people's minds.
It is. I mean, look at what you said earlier about Gordon Lightfoot. He's coming to, is it Bloomberg, Pennsylvania?
Greensburg.
He's still doing it. You have to do that. I'm sure he'll sell a lot of CDs and downloads and things like that. So, and people, you have to love doing it too. And I know that he loves doing it. So, yeah. So keep touring, keep playing. Use every opportunity to play. The Allman Brothers did that too. They played every place they could.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned that you're a psychologist. Where did your interest in that begin?
Well, that was something, that's a great question. That started in college, and I mentioned my brother's suicide. My brother had a lot of mental problems,
mm-hmm.
and my father was a composer and a professor. So I'll tie those two in together. Because of my brother's psychiatric problems, I got interested in this. But because my father was a professor, he talked nonstop. So he would talk nonstop at the dinner table. I was the youngest of four, so I would say like half a sentence. And then my mother would say, Matthew has he's so talented at summarizing. And so I got praised for being able to listen to a conversation and summarize, which is really what I do as a psychologist. I listen deeply, and then I'll offer some way of summarizing. It's more than that. But I got particularly interested in the psychology of relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So I do a lot of couples counseling, and I'm really passionate about that as well. It's a way to help people. It's a nice alternative to music because with music, you need people. You've got your hand out to people, whether it's producers, or DJs, or publishers. As a therapist, people are thanking you, and that's very, very gratifying. It can be very hard to be a musician and have your hand out and not get anything back. So psychology really operates a different part of my brain, which I really enjoy. But without the music, I think it would be incomplete. So I think both work well, and I'm very grateful to psychology because it allows me to fund my own music.
Wonderful. One of the other things that I wanted to bring up is how a lot of high schools and grade schools are starting to eliminate music programs due to budget cuts and all of that. How important is music in the arts from a young age? How does that impact you?
Well, there's a lot of research about the importance of music. I mean, basically, a society without music or without art is a denuded society without soul. Our music programs, or I'm trying to think back to my own experience with them, are, I think what probably has to happen is if those are not funded, then the slack is going to be picked up by people giving music lessons to kids outside of school, churches, and things like that. But I think with music, you want to expose a lot of people to music so they either learn to appreciate it or they get exposed to it and decide that they want to do it. And we need musicians and we need artists. And so it's a shame to have that be cut out. And it's a pendulum. I think the pendulum will swing back. I don't think it'll be cut for forever. I think it'll have to come back.
Absolutely. Now, one of the last things I wanted to bring up was, where do you see the music industry heading 10 or 15 years down the road?
Well, I think it's interesting to see the changes. So, and then, you know, so you take the album. You know, the album was something that when I was growing up, we would buy an album, and the whole process of buying an album and opening it up and putting it on the stereo was this religious experience, and you could spend days just reading the album cover. And then that got replaced by CDs, and CDs are not as good sound-wise, and you can't spend hours looking at the cover and the writing because it's so small. And CDs get scratched just like records get scratched. So then CDs now are replaced by streaming.
Mm-hmm.
But albums are coming back because people like to have a physical entity to hold on to. So even with all the streaming, I think people will still need physical entities. And I think it's going to come back because streaming is very convenient. But it's not the same as hearing an album from beginning to end. And so I think it's going to be a pendulum shift. I think the way that artists right now are making money is through merchandise. So that's probably going to continue to become more important. But the music industry will never be what it was when I was growing up because it's too diverse. You've got so many different outlets and so many different genres, and within each of those genres there are some great musicians. So I think it'll continue, and I think the level of expertise is increasing, but also the level of, I hate to say, mediocrity is also increasing. One of the problems I have with the current music scene is that the songs don't touch on any subjects other than love.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, that's the marketplace. But I would like to see more songs that cope with alienation, with the ups and downs of being human, mortality, loss, things like that. So I'm hopeful, and I think it just takes more energy now to seek out new artists. So stations like your station that plays new artists are wonderful. I think Pandora is a great way to find out new artists. So I think it's harder because there's so much supply out there. You just have to try a little harder to find it. So I think it'll continue with niches for different type of genres that will continue to appeal to a certain select people. But you're not going to have the Beatles again. It's just everyone's too spread out.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the things we've been trying to work on here at the station. Because when I took over as the GM, we get a lot of music in the mail. We get a lot of emails. And there's so much to choose from. It's really mind-blowing when you actually think about it, because you don't realize it until you get put in the situation. And I'm like, there's so much good music.
Right.
What am I going to do with it? So one of the things that we started was our Unsigned Artist Playlist. And it airs every night, 10 o'clock. And the whole hour is music from all sorts of genres. We have country, we have pop, we have folk, we have rap, we have whatever it is, you name it, it's in there. And then it also plays sporadically throughout the hour. You might have one or two artists each hour from the Unsigned Artist List come up in the hot clock. Because usually we do a lot of top 40, like traditional stuff. But
right.
One of the things that we've been working on has been with these unsigned artists. Because what I've noticed is that a lot of these artists, they really do care about the music. They care about the craft. They put in a lot more effort than a lot of the 1% that we actually hear about on radio.
Right, right. Yeah, that's a very good point. The 1% you hear on the radio are not necessarily the most talented people.
Right.
So I have a question for you. How? Because I know I've worked with other radio stations. You probably get 150 CDs a day. How do you go through it all?
Well, we don't get nearly as many CDs as we used to now. A lot of it's been switched to the online streaming. So basically what we do is there's myself, and there's a handful of others that'll listen to the music, and you basically just gotta set aside so much amount of time each day to listen to it all. And a lot of it's really awful. That's to be expected sometimes. But then you listen to some of the stuff, and it's like, wow, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it takes
a fantastic feeling.
Yeah, it definitely takes a lot of time and effort on our end to get through a lot of the music, but it's well worth it when we've come across a lot of really good artists that need to be higher ups, and we've had a lot of young people. We've had people that are veterans of the music industry, such as yourself, Mac Meadows, Mark Sanders, a lot of ones that aren't like the young 20-somethings that are going to blow the world apart. There's a lot of music out there that are from people that have been well-established and have their own certain area.
Right, right. Yeah, so it takes dedication and commitment, and that's the same thing for any profession that you're in. It takes dedication and commitment, and the good stuff is going to rise to the top.
Absolutely. As we get ready to wrap up the interview, is there anything else you'd like our listeners to hear today?
Well, just, you know, thank God for stations like yours, because you're not formatted. You're not told what to play. And so I just want to praise you for being part of that and to your listenership, because without listeners, there's nothing. And, you know, I'm glad people love music that much and are looking for great new songs. And so keep up your good work, and thank you for the opportunity to be here.
Well, I'm glad you could join us today, Matthew. I'm a big fan, and I'm really glad we were able to have this opportunity.
Thank you, Walker. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. I'm going to have you stay on the line while we cut back to the music. Listeners, we are going to start off with the first album. We have Reap What You Sow by Matthew Alexander on 91.5 WGLZ.